It's been 86 days since the Category 5 Hurricane Maria hit Puerto Rico. The U.S. territory is in the middle of the largest blackout in American history, and conditions are still very poor on the island. Charles Venator Santiago is an associate professor with a joint appointment in political science and El Instituto Latina, Caribbean, and Latin American Studies Institute at the University of Connecticut. He's with us for an update on the latest news from Puerto Rico. Charles, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks for having me.
I want to start by asking, when we last talked to you, you were working to try to get your mother out of Puerto Rico. Can you talk about how she and your family are doing now?
Well, you know, we managed to get her. It was very expensive. The airlines were gouging us too much. But she came with a pneumonia and a heart condition and almost had a stroke. But as soon as she was here, we were able to get her great health care in Massachusetts, and she's doing well. Depressed, because she's here in the cold instead of in the warm weather with her projects, but safe and sound.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. Is her story typical of other people in Puerto Rico, having a hard time getting health treatment and trying to figure out how to get it there or in the United States?
Yes, because in her case, her Medicare had not transferred over to the United States, so it took about a month to get it all set up. And lots of folks are leaving the island because they can't live under the conditions.
So can you talk about the conditions? We're still hearing about people not having fresh water, electricity. What is going on there now?
So part of the problem is that they're rebuilding the electric system. They're not fixing it. And before the hurricane, about a third of the electricity was consumed by corporations, and about 17% was lost to transmission. So we're talking about probably 35% of electricity is just not getting it to people. Right now, under current conditions, about 45% of the population has access to electricity, and water is not quite available either because they need to have electricity to purify the systems. And there's no way to measure who's getting what electricity at what point. So part of what's going on is that a lot of people are going on 100 days since Hurricane Irma, without electricity or water or drinking water. There's been an increase in deaths because of waterborne illnesses, and the local economy is destroyed because there's no functioning electricity in most of the island.
And I've heard there are other infrastructure problems, garbage disposal, soccer fields in some cases are temporarily being used to amass garbage because that system has kind of fallen apart.
There's no energy available to relocate garbage. Some garbage is just in the ground everywhere. Even tree removal is not available because there aren't enough trucks or there's not enough money to essentially clean up the streets.
We're talking to Charles Venator Santiago from the University of Connecticut, looking at the latest in Puerto Rico's recovery efforts. Can you talk about the response from the federal government? What are you seeing there?
So two things going on. One, it's been very slow. At a local and federal level, in part because in the case of FEMA, it's been overwhelmed with claims, not just with Puerto Rico, but also Texas and Florida and California, and it just doesn't have the resources to respond. Another reason is that they weren't prepared to essentially deal with the circumstances in Puerto Rico. They brought satellite phones that weren't adjusted to Puerto Rico. They brought English speakers instead of hiring local folks in the island who spoke Spanish. They assumed people could fill out applications through the internet, even though 90% of the island did not have electricity. So there were a number of fumbles that were happening. But the major problem in the island, as the recent Senate debates revealed, was that the Puerto Rican government had refused to enact an emergency response plan that's been in place. So the federal response has been slow, inadequate, but also the local government has been inept, in some cases corrupt, in the implementation of a response to the devastation created by the hurricane.
Is part of the problem that, in some ways, Puerto Rico is in this unique position? It's part of the United States. It's not a state. It's kind of in this gray area. The U.S. can treat it one way or the other. The Puerto Rican government can treat it one way or the other?
Yes, because Puerto Rico is an unincorporated territory, there is no parity funding, and Congress can cherry-pick, or the U.S. government can cherry-pick, when it wants to treat it as a foreign country, as a part of the United States, or something else. So a lot of the responses to Puerto Rico are dependent on the mood of Congress, and whether Congress sees it feasible to essentially subsidize responses to Puerto Rico.
And how much you mentioned the idea of rebuilding instead of repairing the electrical grid. How much of a debate is going on between, okay, we need quick fixes here to restore these services to people versus we need to build a new infrastructure that's going to be more resilient maybe for future disasters?
So part of the challenge is that the Stafford Act essentially calls for replacing damaged goods. excuse me. But part of the problem is that Puerto Rico doesn't have the money, and the federal government has been slow in releasing money for materials. So they're essentially lifting up lines without investing in infrastructure. And the infrastructure had already began to collapse about 2 years ago, in large measure because it's outdated and because of the financial crisis. So there's very little talk about putting, say, underground electric lines or new purification systems or creating a multi-pronged grid in the island. Right now, they're just lifting up the lines and turning on the electricity and hoping that households will get access to electricity and water.
You talked about the financial situation in Puerto Rico. Can you talk about a little bit about the debt situation there, which was a problem pre-hurricanes here, and then how that's affecting recovery?
So part of the problem is that Congress in the summer of 2016 enacted legislation imposing a financial control board to manage the island's economy. And the financial control board decided to adopt an austerity approach that had failed in Kansas and in Greece. But that's the approach that they put forth to manage the economy. And by their own accounts, the economy would not grow until 2016. Now, this is before Hurricane Maria. On top of that, Congress refused to accept full faith and credit over the island's debt, even though it's now assuming control over the island's economy. So you had an economy that was not expected to grow before 2026. And then Hurricane Irma and Maria destroy the infrastructure, and Puerto Rico just doesn't have any income or money to repair anything. At the same time, the Trump administration is relying on loans for Puerto Rico to rebuild the island's economy and the infrastructure. But Puerto Rico just doesn't have the liquidity or the resources to fix anything.
And yeah, can you talk about what's left of the Puerto Rican economy now, already in rough shape? Now, as you say, the infrastructure damaged, destroyed in some cases. What's the economy like there now?
Well, I was in the island about a month ago, and the most shocking, the most shocking thing for me was that I walked down some of the wealthiest and busiest areas in San Juan, and businesses were closed because they didn't have electricity, they didn't have access to internet, they couldn't function. So you have a sort of microeconomy that's just not functioning. Excuse me. Restaurants are closed, and people are just surviving on their retirement funds or some cases disability or in some cases vacation money. And without a local infrastructure, the island's economy is just stagnant.
Charles Venator Santiago is with us from the University of Connecticut. We're talking about the latest in hurricane recovery efforts in Puerto Rico. You can join the conversation now at 800-642-1234 with your questions, your thoughts, maybe your experiences. Do you know someone who's still in Puerto Rico? Do you have family there or people who have moved from there to the mainland U.S.? Temporarily, permanently, we'll talk about that in a bit. How are they holding up, and what do you think the U.S. should do, could do, to help Puerto Rico? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@wpr.org. Charles Venator Santiago is with us from the University of Connecticut. We're talking about Puerto Rico and how the American territory is recovering 86 days after Hurricane Maria. A lot still to do there. You can join in at 800-642-1234. How do you think the U.S. should help or support its territory, Puerto Rico, right now, and the people there? What kinds of relief do you think should be sent to the territory? Do you think it's been treated with enough urgency by the federal government, by the media? And do you have a personal connection to what's going on there? If you're from there, if you have family there, if you've spent time there, call in with your thoughts, your experiences, your questions at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. Charles, we were talking about your mom earlier. She's come over to the country. Are a lot of people leaving the island, coming over to the U.S. mainland since this has happened?
Yes, mainly or primarily to Florida, which is a special host state agreement with Puerto Rico and with the federal government. Excuse me. But they're also coming here to the United States and finding themselves without access to housing, work, or resources. And they're creating, in some ways, hardship in some of the families that they're or friends that they're coming to live with.
And you mentioned FEMA overwhelmed, not just in Puerto Rico, but elsewhere in the country. Is FEMA the agency that's supposed to help people as they temporarily take refuge in the mainland, or who's in charge there?
So, partly what's going on is that FEMA is paying for people to leave the island, or presumably paying, but the states assume responsibility for helping people. And some states just don't have the resources to help people. And by help people, I mean find them housing, temporary housing, jobs, transportation, education. States are doing something. New York, Connecticut, New Jersey. Florida is an exception because they're allocating the resources. But no, the states are expected to assume most of the responsibility at this point.
I want to bring on a caller now. Lee is with us in Green Bay. Lee, hi.
Hi, this is the first time I called, but I couldn't help but respond. What can we do as citizens to help the citizens of Puerto Rico? You know, I feel helpless, and I know it's a problem with the government, but is there something we can do as citizens to help this?
So there are several options. One is you can work directly with different nonprofit groups in the mainland and in the island, and I can forward you a list of reliable nonprofits that have been vetted by the City University of New York's Center for Puerto Rican Studies. And also tell Congress, listen, you need to assume responsibility over citizens and need to make some decisions about whether you're going to provide assistance to address the humanitarian crisis in Puerto Rico.
Lee, thanks for that call, and we'll, Charles, offline get that list from you and get it posted on the Central Time Facebook page, I think. We'll try to get that up there by the weekend. Thanks a lot for calling in, Lee. Are we seeing a big response from nonprofits, from charities around the mainland United States to this?
Yes, there's a lot. There have been millions of dollars raised from the diaspora, or the mainland, and steered to different communities. Some are successful, some have not been successful. But mostly what's been helpful is to send economic donations or equipment that can be used to purify water or to address issues. But you have to work with the local community so you don't overwhelm the community, and also to identify the needs of a particular community.
And we talked to a Wisconsin doctor who spent time working with people. I think he was actually caught while on vacation for the hurricane and ended up doing medical work down there. Are there enough healthcare providers doing that kind of work in Puerto Rico right now?
So according to the latest report from the Secretary of Health, almost about 96% of hospitals are up and running. Part of the problem is that people can't afford to go to the hospital right now because they don't have any money or to get private medical care. But most hospitals are already running. The problem is really getting access to medications and getting access to reliable energy to sustain or keep the hospitals working.
Charles Venator Santiago is with us. He's with the University of Connecticut, and we're talking about the latest news from Puerto Rico, recovery efforts more than 80 days after a major hurricane there. And Charles, getting back to people leaving the island, you mentioned a lot of them in Florida, some in other states. Is there a sense that they're leaving temporarily, or do you think a lot of people are trying to move to the mainland to stay now?
I think we won't know until February. The census is still measuring these movements. But anecdotally, in Connecticut, a lot of people are coming here and they're escaping the conditions in Puerto Rico. In other words, lack of electricity and water. But they're coming to the mainland, and in some places they don't have access to work or housing. So there's a lot of frustration, and a lot of folks are talking about returning. So at this point, I think it's reasonable to say that migration is temporary. But temporary may mean until next summer, until electricity is fully restored in the island. Particularly if you look at migrations based on parents who want to keep their children in schools. But we don't know. because the government of Puerto Rico had promised that 95% of the island would be electrified by now, and we're around 35% to 40%. And it's just people can't live under those conditions in the island. At the same time, they can't abandon their homes and their work in Puerto Rico. It's a catch-22 for a lot of folks.
Now, when we talked about this a little sooner after the event, some of our callers called in at 800-642-1234, by the way, called in and talked about the damage done to their homes. And, you know, it isn't just an economic story or a shelter story. It's, you know, these are their homes. This is an emotional story, too. This is traumatic for a lot of people there.
Yeah, and FEMA is committing to spend some money in fixing homes, but nowhere or nearly enough to repair houses. Last number I heard is around, they're committing around $17,000 per home. But, you know, excuse me, that's just not enough to repair the damage in some cases for some homes. For some homes, that means rebuilding a full house, and that amount of money is just not enough.
Now, getting back to U.S. federal policy, we've got the Republican tax bill, maybe an agreement on it among Republicans in Congress. It seems to be getting closer. And I understand that can have an impact actually on Puerto Rico and the recovery there.
So part of the problem is that the new tax bill, the Republican tax bill, is putting a series of tariffs or taxes on corporations doing business in Puerto Rico. And one of the tariffs is around 20%. For merchandise imported into the mainland from the island. That's going to devastate the local economy because folks just can't afford to pay that additional tariff, or the goods will, the price of goods is just going to raise at an inordinate cost. Now, we don't know what's going to happen there, but so far Congress has indicated that they're going to continue to put that tariff. And some people argue that that tariff is going to be used to subsidize some of the recovery in the island. But at what cost? It might destroy the local economy.
That's back into that gray area of what Puerto Rico is and how it relates to the federal government. Because, I mean, that would, if somebody said, hey, we were going to put a tariff on goods from Illinois being sold in Wisconsin, I mean, I think that's just plain illegal,
yeah.
Unconstitutional. But Puerto Rico, because of this unique situation, that is something that can be done.
Yeah, no, that's the exact analogy. But since 1901, the Supreme Court said that it is constitutional because Puerto Rico is what's called a non-incorporated territory that belongs to the U.S. but is not a part of the United States unless Congress specifically says that it's a part of the United States for a particular part of the Constitution or legislation. On top of that, or in addition to that, the problem is that the Supreme Court and Congress have agreed that that it can limit the extension of funds without extending parity funds. So you have a sort of uneven economic development based on access to funds. In other words, Congress can only send or is limited to sending cap funding to the island or block grants. That means that U.S. citizens who live in the island just don't have enough access to the same resources that are available to U.S. citizens here, Social Security, welfare, Medicaid, et cetera. So you have this sort of dual situation going on. It's treated like a foreign country for tax purposes and also for federal funding purposes.
So in our last couple of minutes, I'm going to throw at you a question that people have been arguing about for literally decades. Would Puerto Rico be better off either as a state or as a completely independent entity, independent of the United States?
Independent of the United States, it would have access to international markets, and it would have access, and it could potentially have access to U.S. markets. So I think from a financial perspective, following the Irish model would work. Now, if Puerto Rico became a state, which is doubtful, because Puerto Ricans vote Democrats, and it's not clear that Congress is willing to give Puerto Rico two Democratic senators and four legislators, three or four legislators. But the argument there for statehood would be that it would have access to parity funding and constitutional equality. So in that sense, the additional revenues provided by statehood could sort of close the gap, not only for the fiscal crisis, but in general.
And Charles, as we wrap up, best case, what would your hopes be for the recovery over the next, say, 6 months in Puerto Rico?
So I think citizens should put pressure on Congress to approve a relief package that helps to light up the island and bring essential services to the island, like water and electricity and healthcare, or appropriate healthcare. But again, I'm really skeptical with this Congress. Congress is going the opposite way. They're trying to move money to the military as opposed to social services. But yeah, no, the idea would be that people would get access to basic living conditions to address the humanitarian crisis.
And then briefly, longer term.
Longer term, that there would be a rebuilding of the island's infrastructure that can withstand hurricanes and the devastation of, financial global markets or U.S. Investment. And by this, I mean we need to move to a sustainable energy system. We need to move to a more planned economy that can withstand the vagaries of the status. That would be the hopeful move. But that, according to the local government, the fiscal control board, that has around anywhere from a $94 to a $300 billion price tag.
We'll leave it there for now. Charles, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you. Anytime.
That's Charles Venator Santiago, associate professor. He has a joint appointment in political science and El Instituto Latina Caribbean and Latin American Studies Institute at the University of Connecticut. He joined us for an update with the latest news out of Puerto Rico.